of the instructions in the Bible can pretty much be categorized into two different forms. Either vertical instructions, and what I mean by that is how we're supposed to relate to God, vertical instructions, or horizontal instructions. In other words, how we're supposed to relate to other people on this level. Those are the basic spheres of relationships in our lives, and so it makes sense that Scripture could be categorized in that way. As the Apostle Paul is finishing this letter to the church in Thessalonica, he's going to end with some different sets of instructions. We're going to go over the horizontal instructions, how we relate to other people today, and then next week, we're going to go through the vertical instructions in terms of our spiritual relationship with God and what we can do to improve that relationship. So we'll be in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 through 15 today. If you have a Bible, you're welcome to follow along. It's a short passage, but plenty packed in there. So let's begin. Paul writes, "We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves." Christian leadership is more defined by function than title. It's not that titles or official roles or positions are unimportant. They have their place. In fact, the people that Paul is referring to here probably had that, almost assuredly had that, some kind of formal role. But you aren't a leader if you just have a title. Right? And maybe that's why Paul refers to them not by name or by title, but by what they're doing. What they're doing is laboring. They are over others, and they admonish them. Paul is talking about one group of people who are fulfilling these functions. Today, we would probably call them overseers or elders or maybe even pastors. I know the terminology gets a little bit muddy because we use things differently. But they would be the church leaders in Thessalonica. The word labor, these people were working. The word labor used elsewhere in 1 Thessalonians seems to refer to manual labor, like working hard, physical manual labor. Over you seems to carry the connotation, again, elsewhere in Scripture, of leading and caring and admonishing. Probably the least fun part, but this is firm correction. Right? Calling people out on sin or unwise actions or attitudes. Now here's the thing. Paul is asking the church to respect these leaders. And this is where it gets a little bit awkward for me being one of the leaders of this church, because it would easily seem like I would be standing up here on stage saying, "Respect me." Well, here's what I think. I believe a good Christian leader doesn't demand respect. I believe a good Christian leader's character and work would demand it. And I think that's what Paul is saying here. These were people who were loving their people, who had responsibility for the rest of the church, and they were working hard at it. He also says, be at peace among yourselves. In terms of respecting leaders and loving leaders, this is one of the great gifts to church leadership, let me tell you, is being at peace among yourselves. No joke. Right? Obviously, there was divisiveness, or at least the potential for divisiveness. Maybe it even dealt with leadership. In other letters that Paul writes to other churches, he was dealing with factions. You know, I'm with this leader because they're awesome. No. I'm with this guy because he's even awesomer. But with the right fellowship, Maybe that's a made-up word, but this is who Paul is addressing. He's not addressing specifically the leaders. He's addressing those who are to be following. With the right fellowship, peace should be the result. Right? And fellowship goes hand in hand with good leadership. Let's face it, there are some different views of leadership. Some view leadership as leading from a throne. Right? I'm up here, you're down there. I look down on you, little people. Now, let's be honest. That's not always an invalid leadership style. I think of Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1, where Isaiah says, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. God leads from a throne. And that's valid. God says, serve me, do what I say. We should serve him and do what he says, because he's up here and we're down there. But God also gave us an incredible example, because he also came down from the throne to serve. And where was Jesus? He was down here washing people's feet on his knees. That's the example of servant leadership that God has given to us. And I think that's the example that church leaders need to follow. Church is not intended to be divided in terms of us versus them. The church is an eternal we. And so when Paul writes these instructions and says, be at peace with one another, I think that's the result of servant leadership and everyone falling all over each other to serve one another, not to direct from any kind of throne. As Paul continues on in his instructions, he says, and we urge you, brothers, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with them all. See that no one repays anyone evil for evil, but always seek to do good to one another and to everyone. Some have made a connection with the idle and the faint-hearted and the weak to other groups of people that Paul's already addressed in this letter. And there may very well be a lot of validity to that. As he talks about admonishing, well, the responsibility of church leadership to admonish has already been established. We just talked about that. But this is actually a whole church responsibility. Look at who he's talking to. And we urge you, brothers and sisters. He's talking to the whole church. Admonish the idle. Sometimes it can be translated disorderly or unruly. These may have been people who were not working, right? Maybe even for spiritual reasons. And it seems in earlier in the letter that some people expected Christ to come back. So, yeah, I'm not going to get a job. I mean, I've got like weeks or maybe months until Christ returns. So why should I work? How many of you like group projects? Oh, hold on. Don't raise your hand. Because if you raise your hand, you're probably one of two people. You're either an extrovert, and you're like, group projects mean that people are forced to be with me. This is awesome. Or you might be a freeloader. Right? People hate group projects often because somebody in the group is usually a mooch. Right? Somebody is going to be freeloading and less concerned about their grade and making sure that they can ride on the coattails of someone who cares more about their grade, right? I mean, that's the thing. So this could have been happening in the church at Thessalonica, right? If people are working hard in Thessalonica, at least most people, and if they're caring about their church community like they should be, it's quite possible for people to kind of go along for the ride. No, people are going to take care of me. It's fine. I don't need to work. Hold on. So this, the admonishing the idle, again, we said earlier that it could also mean disorderly or unruly. And so whether it's people who are just being lazy, or whether it's people who are kind of poking and prodding and just being kind of a general pain because they can, or maybe living life really on the edge or even over the edge of godly conduct, Paul says there are some hard words that need to come. And from who? Well, the leaders, yes, but also the whole church. This is a group responsibility, not just designated for the leadership. And so there are some hard words that need to come to these people in order to produce softer hearts towards God. He also talks about the faint-hearted and encouraging them. Again, if we're looking at maybe groups of people who had been addressed before in the letter, the faint-hearted might be those who are worried about those who have already died. Christian relatives, perhaps, or Christian friends that have died, they were worried about them. What's going to happen to them? They might be worried about their own salvation. Am I really going to heaven? Am I really part of God's people? Or they might be worried about persecution. We know that there was some happening at that time toward the Thessalonians. How do you encourage people? Do you give them platitudes? Ah, it'll be fine. It might not. I mean, in the short run. So that may not be the most helpful. But I think we should take a cue from Paul and encourage them from Scripture. Right? If you're worried about a Christian relative who has died, be encouraged. They're with God. And when the resurrection comes, they'll go first. You're worried about persecution. Jesus suffered it. Jesus predicted it. Be encouraged. It's actually an opportunity to grow in strength and faith. If you're worried about your salvation, well, do you believe that in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ? Then be encouraged. You're saved and you can know it. It comes down to encouraging people with the truths of Scripture. That does require that we, A, know it, and B, wield it appropriately. Not as a club, but as a tool to build people up. Paul also talks about the weak. There's not a lot of context to know exactly who Paul was addressing here. Although if Paul is really referring to groups of people he's already talked to earlier in the letter or address, maybe the weak would fit into the category of those with a lack of self-control, especially with regard to sexual purity, like in 1 Thessalonians 4:3. But in a broad sense, it would be people who don't have the strength, either physical, mental, or spiritual strength to get through a challenge or circumstance. And this is the part, as a church, where we shoulder one another's burdens, either literally or figuratively. And Paul says, be patient with them all. Because these people can easily be seen as the problem people. And we can easily lose patience with people if we view them as problem people. And here's why. I think sometimes we like to be on this throne. Not the throne of leadership, but the more common throne of judgment and arrogance. Where we look at other people and we lose patience with them. for a couple of reasons, I think, or at least there are a couple of groups that I think we lose patience with quickly. One group of people would be those who struggle with something that we don't. Just to use it as an example, maybe we don't struggle with or haven't struggled with a drug or alcohol addiction. Is it easy to lose patience with someone who might? I think the second group of people that we tend to lose patience with quickly are those who still struggle with something that we used to. Maybe using that same example, maybe we did struggle with a drug or alcohol addiction, and now we don't because God delivered us from it. God delivered us from it. How quickly we can tend to move from God delivered me from this to I kicked this all by myself. And at that point, it's very easy to look down on others who still struggle with something that we used to. But Paul says, be patient with all. That's a good reminder for us, because quite frankly, there's probably people who are being very patient with me right now and with you right now. We may just not be aware of it. But it is easy dealing with people to think that things are sometimes unfair. Right? Why can't so-and-so figure out their life? Why do I have to shoulder their burden? Why do I have to be patient with so-and-so after so many hurts? Maybe they know that they've hurt you, maybe they don't, but they're still there. Why are people persecuting me? Why is it hard to be a Christian? Sometimes it's easy to want to strike back. Well, Paul puts the kibosh on that. He writes elsewhere, other principles, that we are not to take revenge. Right? That's God's job. Vengeance is the Lord's. And so we're not to concern ourselves with how to repay evil for evil. Escalation is the name of that game, and it really does not lead to peace. And so whether this evil was happening within the church, which is certainly possible, or whether it was coming from outside in the form of persecution. Again, we know that there was some of that happening. Paul is indiscriminate in his instructions. Don't repay anyone. No one. That's a primarily negative command, right? It's to avoid doing something. Don't take revenge. That's a negative command. But he goes even further. Because nature abhors a vacuum, right? If you concern yourself only with the things that you're not supposed to do, A, you'll find something that's not listed to do, but B, you won't be focused on where you want to go and what you should be doing. And so Paul goes that extra step. He tells us what we should be doing, which is a small matter of always seeking to do good to one another and to everyone. Always seeking to do good to one another and to everyone. Just that. Yeah, it's interesting. It sounds a lot like the Golden Rule, doesn't it? Or at least I thought it did when I was reading through this. Jesus, when I was researching this a while back, seems like Jesus wasn't necessarily the first person to state the Golden Rule, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But it seemed like the Golden Rule, for many others, was more of a hands-off approach. That there were other people and teachers around that time that were saying things like, you know, don't do to someone what you wouldn't want them to do to you. Do you see the difference? One is, hey, I'll stay away from you and you stay away from me and we'll be fine. The other, what Jesus stated, and I think what Paul is stating here too, is figure out what a person needs and do that. There's a huge difference in that. This is a command to one another, right? So this is within the church, but this is also to everyone. So this is outside the church as well. One of the things that we try to remind ourselves by doing a couple of service Sundays a year. You guys knocked it out of the park last week. We weren't just getting together and huddling in Christian community and serving each other. We were out doing something that benefits the whole community, Christian, non-Christian. Doesn't matter. Everybody can benefit from some of those things that we were doing. And I think in those instructions, and with that kind of mindset, it does lead to peace, and it sets Christianity apart. Because those are the instructions that Paul leaves us with. And really, if you think about those instructions, Jesus summed up, well, pretty much the Bible, like all the instructions of the Bible. Somebody asked him, what's the greatest commandment? And he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Vertical instructions. And he said, the second's like it, love your neighbor as yourself. Horizontal instructions. All of this really can be summed up in love. And we have an incredible example of love. Because Romans 5:8 says that God demonstrated his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So that's the filter. That's the rubric that we need to use in order to interact with other people. Is how did God demonstrate his love for us? And therefore, how do we demonstrate love to other people? It's not up there on a throne of our own making, but it's down on our knees serving.